old translation. A year or two earlier, at the enormous Midtown Playhouse known as the New York Hippodrome, some of the handsomest couples in the city, husbands in evening dress, wives in flowing gowns and pearls, had filled the boxes for the premiere of A Yankee Circus on Mars. On a stage that stretched to seemingly astronomical proportions, acrobats and bareback riders performed amid a chorus of Martians 300 strong. The Martians that appeared in Manhattan's theaters and elite drawing rooms were, one might reasonably assume, mere humans in alien attire, but those that showed up in the magazines and daily papers surely were not. Artists' renditions depicted the Martians the way scientists imagined their environment had molded them. Tall and lithe, perhaps winged or gilled, sporting an insect's antennae or an elephant's trunk. The illustrations left readers agape and aghast. "The Martians may be very fine intellectual people," remarked one Jane Jones of Binghamton, New York, "but we do not, and never shall, like their looks." Although their visages were homely, the physical infrastructure they had erected was something to behold. Telescopic observations revealed on Mars great centers of population and a network of marvelously designed canals traversing the deserts, the New York Times reported in a story that was hardly meant to be a hoax. Photographs corroborated the existence of such monumental feats of hydraulic engineering. The New York World declared in a headline, "Scientists now know positively that there are thirsty people on Mars." And among those who knew this positively was Alexander Graham Bell, America's elder statesman of science. Having reviewed the evidence, he saw no escape from the conviction that Mars is inhabited by a highly civilized and intelligent race of beings. Meanwhile, towering above the trees on Long Island's North Shore stood the instrument that might soon enable humankind to contact the Martians, an interplanetary radio transmitter that had been financed by J.P. Morgan, the Wall Street titan and one of the nation's most sober money men. Philosophers, spiritualists, even God-fearing clergy craved to learn what those sapient aliens across the void might teach us. "Someday, theology will be shaken out of its seed pod present of Earth-centricism and egotism by the study of soul life on this brother planet," a Chicago minister wrote with avid expectation to the astronomer who, more than anyone, had staked his career on understanding the Martians and their society. "So toil away, and God bless you." For a decade and a half, the Mars craze spread like a raging epidemic, or a burgeoning wildfire, across class divides and borders, but particularly in the United States, consuming almost everything in its path. In the midst of it all, as if in the fog of a long, drawn-out battle, it was often difficult to discern the truth, to separate insight from delusion, to identify who were the geniuses and who were the cranks. By the time the frenzy abated in the years around World War I, some of the glorified participants would end up publicly humiliated and bankrupt, even institutionalized, and the world's perception of its place in the universe would be forever altered. I arrived on Earth in the 1960s, and, like many children born in the age of NASA's Apollo program, I was raised on spacemen and Martians. My first toy action figure was a crew-cut astronaut with bendable limbs and an American flag emblazoned on his chest, and I can still picture that electrifying summer night in 1969 when my family gathered to watch Neil Armstrong step onto the lunar surface. It was on TV that I saw Martians, too, though I knew, or had been told anyway, that they were pure make-believe. I laughed at Ray Walston in My Favorite Martian, a sitcom about a wayward alien who had crash-landed in California and who sprouted antennae from his head, for reasons I failed to comprehend yet readily accepted. Watching Saturday morning cartoons, I rooted for Bugs Bunny as he battled Marvin the Martian's hapless attempts at destroying Earth. I also encountered hand-me-down Martians, ones from my parents' generation, that I discovered in old comic books and movies and sci-fi novels. More than a half century later, having built a career as a